Hi, I'm Joanna Chaundy, and you're listening to Baggy Jeans, the podcast, where I chat to the female music artists who made the 90s R&B era so unforgettable. We take a nostalgic look at the music, the videos, and the fashion. So whether you're a newbie to this genre or just want to remember how great it was, tune into Baggy Jeans, where I unpick the seams of 90s R&B. My first guest is Joy Marshall, the lead singer of Jade, the trio that brought us the anthem Don't Walk Away, as well as I Wanna Love You and Every Day of the Week. She joined me from Atlanta, Georgia, and I began by asking her how the group first got together.
I moved to California right after high school, and I had two roommates, Angie and Debbie. And Jade originally was myself, Angie, and Debbie, and Jade was an acronym for J-A-D. And so we got a deal with Warner Brothers. And when after we got the deal and got with the producers and started in the studio, there was some sort of political things to change people around and that kind of stuff. And so I remained in the group. So I came up with the group because of my roommates. And we were living together, and I was like, let's just put a group together. We're out here, we're young, we're free. Let's just do something. There's a lot of music happening. And so we were like, yeah, let's do it. So originally Jade was Joy, Angie, Debbie with the long sound over the A. And then after the studio situation and Angie and Debbie got dropped from the deal, but we're still friends to this day. Debbie's my bestie. She's a very successful broker and Angie's a doctor. And so, and we all still talk to each other. So fortunately, we were able to get through that part of our relationship and they still supported me. So,
and that's a rare thing. That's a rare thing to happen.
Yeah. It's a blessing. It's rare. And for us to still be friends all these many years later and besties. In fact, Debbie lives around the corner from me. We bought houses in the same subdivision because that's how close we are. Oh. And our families are close. But we didn't know each other before we got to Illinois, before we got to California. And Angie and Debbie are also from Illinois. They're from Champaign, Illinois, where the University of Illinois is. So we got in the studio. I met Vassal Benford, who is the producer of Jade's first album. And then he introduced me to Tanya, who was his demo singer. But Tanya also happens to be from Chicago, although we didn't know each other in Chicago. And we hit it off. We sang well in the studio, and then we needed a third person. So after auditioning a few people, we met Di Reed, and Di's from Houston, Texas. And we got together with Di, and we heard her sing, and we were like, yes. Mm. And we sang together. We actually went to go see this movie, Waiting to Exhale.
Yes. And
in the movie, towards the end, they sing, I think Boyz II Men's End of the Road was playing. And so we left the theater and we were walking out and then we just started singing it and everybody hit their note. We blended and it was the first time we had ever sung together because we just met her and we wanted to just hang out to see if we got along. And so after the theater, when we started singing, we were like, I think we got something here. So,
do you know what's interesting about you saying that is, for me, listening to a lot of the girl groups in the 90s, Jade, for me, were very strong vocally. And that's something En Vogue also managed to do. And I mean, although there were other groups like SWV and TLC, which were huge and obviously still a part of that era, I think Jade and En Vogue set the bar on vocals more for me.
Yeah, and Brownstone, they were pretty good in Escape. Oh, they all sang. Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of singers back in there.
Yeah, kind of
had to sing. Yeah,
yeah. But you guys kind of had the whole package. You kind of had the vocals. You were cool.
Yes.
I want to touch on the videos because obviously with fashion coming back around, have you noticed? I don't know if it's the same in the States, but definitely over here, 90s fashion has done a full circle.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, when I first started seeing the kids, I call them the kids, wearing like the boots and the jeans, and then I'm seeing the braids and the cutoffs and the high top jeans. I'm like, wait a minute, am I having deja vu, or is this like, did I miss something? Is it back? You know? And, but I think it's so cool, you know, in that era, everything was like baggy jeans and cutoffs and boots, and it was kind of masculine. So a lot of girls wore big baggy clothes and masculine clothes, but that wasn't really our personality naturally. So we just said, we have to do something that speaks to us so that we can inform the people who we are through fashion. And we just sexied it up, you know, for lack of a better term. And it worked for us and we enjoyed it. We wanted to be able to add that femininity to the b-boy hip hop sort of scene that was happening at the time.
So did you guys pick the outfits for your videos?
We actually went to the mall. Wow. We didn't have a stylist when we started. Oh my we gosh. Were at the malls like everybody else. Even up until our second album, we were at the mall. And then we started getting stylists, but we definitely put our own take on what was happening based on who we are, so who we were at the time. So fortunately, we all kind of, we blended together in that way as well, in the fashion sense, because we agreed, we're girly girls. Yeah. And so we wanted to show that, and it worked out for us.
Yeah. And also Jade were very big on the black boots with the shorts. Yes. The half-cut sweaters, which kids are wearing today.
I know.
Yeah. So, you know, do you feel like you kind of had to always have that sexy appeal? Because I know in the 90s, R&B was hugely focused on sex and raunchiness. Yeah. I mean, in the middle of...
Nothing compared to now. Nothing
well, oh, gosh, no.
Yeah. I kind of feel like it's done in a classier way in the 90s than it's done now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, even though in Don't Walk Away, you are emulating having sex in halfway through the song.
Right.
You know, like, but when we were kids, like, you didn't really know what you were singing. You just did it. And then it's not till you're older, you're like, whoa, was I actually singing along to that? Like, this is really raunchy, but it was so cool.
Yeah.
but it was provocative in a way where it wasn't. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It's not in your face. So, do you think the industry has changed a lot? I mean, how do you think it's changed in that wave from the 90s?
Well, I think that women are definitely freer sexually.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They own their bodies, they own their power, and they own their WAP. And you know, they clearly wear what they want to wear. And I think that there's not a, and they're in charge. You know, in the 90s, we definitely had people around us sort of guiding us in terms of our careers and what we should do, what we shouldn't do. Fortunately, while the outfits are clearly shorter and more risque, the attitudes and the business and just the culture of the younger generation, they're freer. You know, and it shows up in their clothes. Some of them are real free, you know, and it shows up in their tassels. But, you know, I'm not one to judge. If that's what you want to do, that's your business. But it's nothing I would have worn back then. And trust me, people tried to get us to wear like fishnet bodysuits with nothing under. Like,
I was going to ask you whether you were confronted with outfits they wanted you to wear that you had to say no.
We were like, hell no, we're not wearing that. There's no ma'am, we're not wearing that. My mama got to see this, my grandmother has to see this. And if you know, the Midwest is very different from California is more, because of the Hollywood thing, people have different, more lax attitudes. You know, we were from the Midwest and Di's from the South in Texas. And it's more conservative. And so we would only go so far sexy before we allowed someone to sort of take away our Midwestern values, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Because the second album, because your first album came out in 1992. Mm-hmm. So your second album, you kind of had matured outfit wise, even though it was still super cool. Like, I remember, I think it was it Tonya had the stripy socks that come over your knee? Yeah. Oh, I used to love those. Like, where did she get those? They look so cool. But obviously, if I had put them on, I would have looked absolutely mental.
With the boots.
Yeah, absolutely. But and the braids, like you also had the braids for the second album as well, right?
Well, so, we had them in the first single, but we changed it up a bit. And then after that, we just wore our hair down, like in every day of the week video. We just wore our hair out. So it wasn't, we sort of morphed out of the braids a little bit. We started with the first video from the second album and then we just went full glam on the second one.
What would you say was the most fun part of your career in that era? What was the most exciting thing that you guys did?
Well, it's so much. I mean, traveling for sure. Mm-hmm. Doing Top of the Pops 7 times.
Wow, oh, dude, 7 times. I didn't realize it was
7 times.
Yeah.
We lived in California and London. I'm telling you, for the most part, I still have friends there. We spent so much time there. We were in Kensington. We ate in Brixton.
You knew where the places to be were. That's where the best food is.
Oh yeah, we went to clubs. We did all kinds of, I mean, we that was our stomping ground outside of the US.
Again, back then in London, it was always a big thing to go clubbing, and artists and groups would always perform at clubs. So is that something you did a lot of?
We did a few clubs when we first on the first album, we did more stages, and then you know, we would travel throughout England. We would go to Manchester and other places, Leeds, and do more concerts. Mm-hmm. But we would hang out at the clubs. So, yeah, that was our European base because we did go to Germany and all these other places. But when we were in Europe, we always landed in London. That was our place. We felt at home there. And then because everyone spoke English and we spoke English. And so we would sort of like, that's our spot. We want to go back there. And then we would go, like I said, we ate pretty much every day at Cotton's in Brixton. We got to know Michelle who owned it. And it's our spot. It's our home away from home.
Are you aware, Joy, of how popular Don't Walk Away still is today? I mean, we have Kistery over here, which constantly plays 90s songs. And it's played every time I turn on Kistery. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am surprised with the way that the song has held up over the years, but I love the song so much. It's, you know, it's the Jade anthem. And in fact, when we recorded the song, the track was originally for Stephanie Mills. And we were finished with our album and about to leave the studio. It was probably 3 a.m, something like that. And Vassal put the track up so that he could get ready for his next session the next day. And we heard the track and we were like, no, we have to have that one. And they were like, ladies, you know, the studio, the session's over, we're done. We're done with the album, you know, congratulations. We were like, nope, no congratulations here. We're not leaving until that we get that song. And so we did a full sit-in and we were like, we're not leaving. You're not getting rid of us. And so Ronnie went in the kitchen, wrote the song in like 15 minutes, wrote the lyrics and melody. And we came back and recorded it in about an hour or so.
Wow.
And then we were done and we left at 5 and we were like, okay, now we're done with the album. We weren't leaving until we got that song. So,
and it's one of those songs that you only need to hear those first 3 notes.
Yes.
I mean, that transports me to a time in my life when everything was so great in the music industry for the fans.
Yeah.
Nothing like it is now. And everything was so kind of innocent. There was no social media. Yeah. There was no download. Right. You had to physically go and buy your CD.
Yes.
And is that something you kind of miss? Because I really enjoyed looking at the album covers and like you guys in the high-waist jeans. And, you know, it's such a classic cover that takes people back, you know. And is that something that you kind of treasure that you guys had?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, And one of the things about going to the stores and is that we got to meet fans. We did a lot of in stores. And so people would literally line up down the street, around the corner, and you knew that they liked the music. You were there physically. It wasn't like, let's just put this out here and see. It's like, no, when you go from place to place and you do these in-store interviews and meet and greets, you got to see from the lines how people responded to the music. And then you got to meet fans at the stores, not just in, you know, at a concert backstage or something like that. So it was definitely more personal. And we miss it, you know, for sure.
And do you chat to the other girls regularly still?
I talked to Tanya a couple of weeks ago. I spoke with Di earlier, later last year. I don't even know what month it is with COVID. So, you know, occasionally we speak, and we spoke with Vassal and Ronnie maybe a month ago. So, yeah, we try to stay in touch and you know, everyone has sort of gone on with their lives.
I wasn't sure whether you were aware of this, but I was listening to an interview with Q-Tip, quite an old one, and he said that he spoke about you guys and said that Don't Walk Away was actually the inspiration, the beat for Walk Away was the inspiration for him writing Award Tour for Tribe Called Quest.
Somebody told me that, and that, right, first of all, Tribe Called Quest is one of my favorite groups. And when we would interview back in the 90s and they would say, well, what's on your playlist or who are you listening to? Who's your favorite group? I always say Tribe Called Quest. I love them. So the fact that, you know, we had something to do with one of my favorite songs in the world is is truly an honor.
He said it was the bass line in the beat that he wanted that, because he used to go to clubs and see how people reacted as soon as Don't Walk Away came on. If you listen to Award Tour, the beat, you can actually sing.
Yes. Yeah.
So that is why Award Tour is the way it is.
Okay. Well, he flipped that nicely. Okay. Yeah. Think about that part. Okay.
And which groups, Joy, in the 90s really inspired you guys when you were around? I mean, who were you really aspiring to be like, or that pushed you forward?
Well, you know, we recorded two songs from the Emotions. So that wasn't in our era, but in terms of girl groups, they have the best music. I still love, Best of My Love. We did Don't Ask My Neighbor. We did Blessed. The Jones Girls, Sister Sledge, you know, these are iconic groups from my childhood. And so they sang, you know, they were singers, and you could just feel that they were into, it wasn't just about the showmanship, it was about musicianship. Mm-hmm. And so because I come from a very soulful R&B background, and Tanya comes from a jazz background, and Di from a gospel background, you hear all that in those groups. And so it was kind of natural for all of us, because we all like those groups, not knowing that we kind of, obviously everybody grew up on them, you know, in the 70s, but they're so iconic. So I would say Sister Sledge, Jones Girls, and definitely the Don't Ask My Neighbor Sisters. We love him.
And who would you say was your biggest competition when you guys were out?
I would say probably SWV, because they were three black girls. Mm-hmm. And we were. And then later on, it would be Brownstone. But mostly SWV, they would compare us to. I don't know if it was competition, but we would all often be spoken in the same breath. And the same for them and the same for us, you know.
And what do you miss most about the 90s era?
Just all of the really good music. You can turn on the radio. You could actually listen to the radio without turning it down, without being offended, without being, excuse my language, ear raped.
I'm going to use that one, Joy.
Yes, like, I feel like I just got assaulted on radio now, you know, but back then it was... it was sensual, but it was still about love. It was still about relationships. And so that's what I miss. And it was a lot of good music. Boyz II Men, Silk, Shy, Jodeci, you know, SWV, TLC, you know, En Vogue, and then Destiny's Child. There was so much good music, really good music. You had a lot to choose from.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. The music industry today is so different. I know you speak about the industry quite a lot, Joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've heard other girl groups speak on how people go into it young without a mind of how it's going to work. They think they're going to be rich and they think they're going to make all this money and they actually don't. Is that something that you guys obviously went in, you know, blind like a lot of other groups did?
Yeah, you know, what we didn't know was entertainment law, and that's what you need to know.
Right.
What we understood was the creative side. And in fact, I was an A&R rep I worked for Quincy Jones before I got into Jade. I was his assistant. Wow. And then I did A&R. I actually A&R'd the Boyz in the Hood soundtrack.
Yeah.
And chose all the music and sourced the music for the movie. So I was really clear on the creative aspect of it, but I did not know entertainment law, and we trusted our lawyer. We didn't understand how incestuous the entertainment legal business is, because sometimes lawyers would work for artists and then they would work for labels. And so they had relationships that lean towards the label. And that happened all the time. There was only so many entertainment lawyers that had names. And, you know, we didn't obviously have enough clout and leverage to go in and ask for everything. And we got nothing. But we did get experiences. And, you know, what kids now are able to have is they're able to parlay the fame into other aspects of business that don't have anything to do with their labels, as long as they don't sign what's called a 360 deal, where the label is involved in all parts of their income streams. And so that didn't exist back then, but we weren't able to have endorsements and all of these other wonderful opportunities that the new generation has.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you had to do it again, you'd be a lot more savvy on what to look out for.
I would make it my business to ask about the money more often. And as an older person, I wouldn't be so worried about offending people and hurting their feelings and losing my deal. You know, part of it for me was the trauma of coming into a situation where my two best friends were let go. And so I had in the back of my head a little desperation, a little fear of it being taken from me. So I didn't ask enough questions and push as hard as I personally should have when I realized that we didn't have the money that we should have had. And that's what happens with young people. You know, you grow up listening to older people and obeying adults, and they were the adults in the room. And I thought that they would have taken care of us the way they said they were going to, but didn't. So that's kind of.
Because TLC have been very, very vocal about the record industry and how, you know, fans just assume they're rich because they've had hits. And actually, you know, I think I remember Left Eye doing an interview many years ago, breaking it down. You know, you have to give such and such percentage to your manager, right, and this to this to this.
Right.
And they ended up, I think, going bankrupt. So it's a very, very cagey
business. So did Toni Braxton. So did a whole lot of other people who didn't, you know, tell their business.
Yeah,
you're the artist was the last on the totem pole. They were the last to be paid. And so none of us knew it. And it happened to all of us, Boyz II Men, SWV. You know, we weren't special in that regard. The industry had a standard and it did all of us that way. So,
and I guess back then as well, it wasn't a kind of known thing that you should write your own music, was it? Whereas now it's kind of drummed into you, write your own music so that you make the money.
Well, the thing about it is, on the second album, we wrote half of the album, and I wrote a song on the first album. However, the way our deal was structured, if we didn't fully recoup our artist royalties, they took it from our writing royalties. That was a particular clause that was in our deal that wasn't in some other people's deals. So we had kind of the worst of the worst deals. So even if we wrote stuff, You know, with the percentages that were given to us, there's just no way we would have been able to recoup what was spent on us, or pay back what was spent on us to become the artist that we were. You know, everything came out of our pockets eventually on the back end. And so you have to pay that back. And so in order to make money, you only make it after you've paid back all the money. And so for us, they took it out of our artist royalties for being singers, and then out of our writing royalties and publishing royalties for being songwriters. So we just, in fact, today we still owe Warner Brothers $1 million.
Wow. You're never ahead of yourself.
You're never ahead. Basically, if you make 6 cents on the dollar, so we made 80 cents a record, right? That we split between the three of us. If you make 80 cents a record on the wholesale price, like $6 or whatever, you just can't, and they're spending $1 million on a video and this, that, like, how many 6 cents do you have to come up with to equal $1 million? You know, you got to sell a billion records pretty much.
But, you know, but on the positive flip side, R&B 90s fans will always remember Jade. I mean, you're just not ever going to go away when it comes to that era. So it must be something that you're very proud of when people talk to you about it.
And nowadays, you know, there's a society that has gone back and helped artists. They sort of restructured the industry so that we are, every time the song is played on the radio, we are now being paid for that. So in terms of the business part, I feel better about it. But in terms of the artistry and what we contributed to the 90s, I am forever grateful.
That was the very insightful Joy Marshall from Jade. You've been listening to Baggy Jeans, the podcast. Join me, Joanna Chaundy, next week for another special guest.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your girl, Mila, and you are listening to the Baggy Jeans podcast, as you should. I do.